If you've ever felt stuck, lacked direction, or just felt like you're drifting in your career and you needed an extra push to help you take control and really take ownership of your career, then today's episode is for you. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show for today's leaders who want to take their game to the next level because they know being a great leader requires constant improvement. And great leaders aren't born or made, they're constantly in the making. I'm your host, Damon Lemby, and I'm also the CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has upskilled over 2 million people over the past 3 decades. Today, I'm excited to welcome my buddy, Andy Storch, to the show. Andy is an author, speaker, and host of 2 podcasts, Talent Development Hot Seat and Own Your Own Career Podcast. He founded the Talent Development Think Tank, and he's the author of a best-selling book called Own Your Own Career, Own Your Life. Andy's mission is to help corporate professionals take control of their career and find greater fulfillment in their life. Andy's going to give us advice on how to stop drifting and take ownership of your career. He talks about the importance of self-reflection, self-awareness, and making informed career choices. One of my favorite parts of today's episode is where Andy talks about how you got to learn how to make it so that you're not letting life happen to you, but happen for us, and get rid of this victim mentality. And he's got some great tips and advice on how to maintain a growth mindset. Another can't miss part of this episode is Andy shares how to stay resilient during very challenging times. And he shares his own story on how he was able to beat cancer. You're not going to want to miss this brave approach that he's taken. So let's dive right into this great conversation I had with my buddy, Andy Storch. One thing that we have in common that I want you to share with the audience is that we both had the same childhood dream. And so what was that?
That's right, to run away and join the circus. No, my childhood dream was to play professional baseball. I grew up watching and playing baseball, watching a ton of baseball, as well as other sports, college football. But I played a lot of baseball and I watched a lot. My favorite team was the Chicago Cubs. Just growing up in the late 80s, early 90s, my favorite player was Ryan Sandberg, the all-star second baseman for the Cubs. Any older Cubs fans out there will remember those teams. And so I really wanted to be a Major League Baseball player, but I ran into a couple problems. And I talk about this in my book and a lot of keynotes that I do to kind of illustrate a couple important lessons. I mean, number one was the odds were stacked against me. So, I mean, I looked it up and it's like roughly one out of every, you know, 5,000 kids who play Little League Baseball could go on to get a chance to play in the major leagues, like 0.05%. You were one of those, Damon, who actually progressed along and played college ball and had a shot. I didn't even get anywhere close. But the second thing was I never really, you know, had a plan. I really put extra effort into it. I showed up to practice in the games and I had fun, but I never really went to my coach or my parents and said like, hey, this is my dream. You know, what do we need to do? Do I need to join some travel teams or hire an extra coach or any of that? I just kind of like drifted along hoping that it might happen. And, you know, I was, if I'm honest, I was kind of a mediocre player. So I don't know if I ever would have had a shot anyway. I mean, I had some home runs, but I had a lot of strikeouts too. But what happened was I got to high school at 15 and actually quit playing. And the reason was I thought that the high school team was too good and I wasn't going to make it. And so I just decided I'll just take myself out. I'll avoid that rejection and just quit. And I share that story a lot too, because I've become so big on growth mindset and like trying lots of things. And, you know, it's almost like one of my biggest regrets in life that I didn't even give myself a shot to make the team. I just decided, hey, I'm not good enough, so I'm not even going to go for it. Meanwhile, you kept on trucking on through, right? And played a lot longer than I did. You know, luckily things worked out okay for me. But I'm okay sharing that stuff now if it can help other people. And one of the big takeaways there, going back to me not really having a plan for it, is that I've learned over the years that a goal without a plan is really just a wish. So it's nice to hope for things. But if you don't have a plan to achieve your big audacious goals, they're probably not going to happen.
No, that's true. And little side note, I kind of feel like you kind of look like Ryan Sandberg.
I'll take it.
Yeah. But growing up, you took yourself out of the game a little too early, and now you're big on growth mindset. Has that always been the case?
So, you know, this idea of growth mindset, for those unfamiliar, it comes from a book called Mindset, The New Psychology of Success by Dr. Carol Dweck, Stanford professor. And what she posited in that book was that people generally operate with either one of two mindsets, a fixed mindset or a growth mindset. And that with a fixed mindset, we generally believe everything in life is fixed. Either you're smart or you're not, you're creative or you're not, you're good at something or you're not, like baseball. And what she found is that people with a fixed mindset tended to shy away from really challenging situations. They're given the choice to treat an easy test or a hard test. They'll take the easy test because they're like, hey, I want to do well on this test. I don't want to do poorly. And on the other side, people with a growth mindset believe that we can always learn, we can always grow, we can always improve. And people with a growth mindset tend to gravitate more towards more challenging situations because that's where we learn the most, and believe that, like, hey, I can go out for something, and if I fail, that's okay. At least I'll learn from it and know that I gave it a shot. And I read that book in 2016, so 8 years ago. And when I read it, I really had an epiphany. I realized that I grew up with a very fixed mindset. And, you know, not taking anything away from my parents or to say that I couldn't achieve things, because my biggest goal was to get good grades and get into college. And luckily, I did that. And I got into really the only school I wanted to go to, which is the University of Florida, which is a pretty difficult school to get into. So I achieved that. But I realized that I was like deathly afraid of failure. And that's why I did things like pull myself out and not try out for the baseball team. And so I really committed to making a big switch after I read this book. And since then, I've been a huge advocate of operating with a growth mindset, teaching others about it. And I've tried so many things that would have seemed so scary to me a long time ago. You know, I started a podcast, actually three different podcasts. I hosted a conference, hosted a virtual summit. I published a book. I've hosted other events. I've shared content on LinkedIn almost daily for the last probably 5 or 6 years, having great conversations with people like you and just continually putting myself out there. And, you know, because you've been doing some of this stuff as a business owner and someone with a podcast, and we've chatted already, you know, we're chatting offline, that not all of these things have worked out. I've tried a lot of things that didn't work or didn't go the way I planned, and they didn't hurt me, right? They were learning experiences. Like, maybe I lost some money on some things, but I'm still here. And actually, I think they all add up to make me stronger and more capable and better over time. And so I'm really committed to that growth mindset idea, and the idea that with a growth mindset, we don't ever really fail. We just learn, right? Which is one of the biggest and best outcomes we can have.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you 100%. And for all our listeners out there, yeah, I've failed a ton of times, and they're always good learning experiences. And so why do you think, for people out there who have a fixed mindset, and we can just get into your book, of course, Own Your Career, Own Your Life, but how do you get them across the fence so that they're free themselves up and they have less fear and they just learn to go for it?
Yeah. So first and foremost, like I talk a lot, I study a lot, and I talk a lot about the concept of mindset, and there's lots of different angles to that. But generally, what I think of as mindset, and I have a chapter in the book about it, is that mindset is essentially your perception and it's your outlook on the world. It's how you perceive things. It's how you interpret things. It's how you operate. It's kind of your operating system. And a lot of that is ingrained in us from our parents, our upbringing, our family, where we grew up, the media we consume. And that's why it's different for so many people. That's why one person can be terrified of trying new things and failure, and one person can be out there doing all kinds of stuff and like not really worrying about it, right? One person thinks that all politicians are crooks and the world is out to get us, right? And another person you talk to is like, hey, the world is great. Everybody's cool. Like, everybody wants to help me. Like, I love life. And you're like, how do these people live in the same world? And the truth is, they live on the same planet, but they have very different mindsets and outlooks on life. So one of the things, you know, one of the hard things is that a lot of this is ingrained in us early on. We all come from different backgrounds and different beliefs on this. But the good news is that it can change. Your mindset can change. As I explained to you, you know, I grew up with a very fixed mindset. I was able to shift that over to a growth mindset. I remember when I explained this concept to my brother a few months back or a couple of years back, and his mind was blown. He was like, oh my God, I did grow up with a very fixed mindset as well. And, you know, he started to make that transition and has done some really cool stuff. And so I think that, you know, these things can absolutely change, but it starts with a commitment to say, I'm going to be more open-minded. I'm going to look to change some things to improve my life. I'm going to keep studying and learning. And then I think a lot of it comes down to self-reflection. Something that's missing for a lot of people in the corporate space and really anywhere is this idea of self-reflection, really taking time in a quiet space without any distractions, right? Sit down with a cup of coffee or tea and a notebook or a pen or pencil, and just write down some thoughts on like the way you're living your life, the way you interpret certain things, things that you like about the way things are going, things that you're unhappy with. What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What are your values, the things that you really care about? And why do you tend to believe certain things? Why do you tend to react to things a certain way? Why do you have certain emotions? I've started to get in the habit of getting really curious about these emotions. If I say, I want to do this thing, but I'm really scared. But why am I scared? Like, what am I really afraid of? What could actually happen? And you can start to think about the worst case and the best case. And what I found over time is like most of the time, because the things that we're scared of these days, like fear is a real thing that we have needed for survival throughout evolution, right? And our kind of caveman brains, thousands of years ago, if you were rejected by your tribe, you were probably going to die. You weren't going to live. But today, our fears are more about, people laughing at us or making fun of us. A lot of things that A, are very likely not going to come true. And B, even if they did, it wouldn't technically hurt us. And so the downside of trying the things that we want to try is usually not nearly as bad as we think it is. And the upside is a lot higher, because once we try something, and that's really the thing, is that if you're scared to do something, but you really want to do it, is to recognize the fear, realize that courage, true courage, is not the lack of fear, but it rather it's recognizing your fear and then taking action anyway, taking action despite the fear. And that as you take those actions, you start to build experience. And as you build experience, it builds your confidence. And as you build confidence, you start to experience less fear to do the thing that you were doing before, whether it's playing baseball, speaking publicly, starting a podcast, managing a project at work, leading people, right? I know you have a lot of managers who listen, and you might be really good as a individual contributor. The first time you are assigned someone as a direct report, that can be really scary. So commit to learning. What's the best way to approach this? And let me just try some stuff and see how it goes, get some feedback, and know that, yeah, I may not work out perfectly the first time. That's okay. It doesn't mean I'm a bad person or I'm a failure. It just means that I'm learning and I'm growing. And that's what life is all about.
So Andy, you mentioned that not blaming your parents for having a fixed mindset, but you talked about it a little bit, and this could help parents and managers. What are you doing differently raising your children to help prevent them from having a fixed mindset and being more towards a growth mindset?
Yeah, it's a great question. And this is something I've thought a lot about, listened to experts. I read a lot of stuff about leadership. I read parenting books. And I think a lot of it, I have two kids, but I think a lot of this transcends to leadership as well. So one of the biggest things, and it was an aha moment, not just from reading that book, but listening to an interview on a podcast with a couple of people that I follow and admire several years ago, was to focus more on praising effort than results, effort over results. So the problem is we tend to gravitate more towards praising results, like, oh, you hit the home run, you won the game, like, congratulations, that's great. And it's natural, but what that does is it focuses a lot of the reward on the outcome. And so kids start to think that, like, well, my parents really only care about me if I win, and they're not as excited for me if I lose, right? And of course, we're going to get excited if they win the game, less excited if they lose the game. But what I've really tried to do is focus, my wife and I both, as we kind of gotten aligned on this, is to focus more on effort and really praise them for putting in a big effort on things, to really let them know that, like, trying something and failing is completely okay. In fact, that's encouraged, because it means you tried something, which is great. And that learning is more important than anything else. And so, yeah, I mean, if my daughter comes home with good grades, I want to celebrate that with her. But she knows that I'm still going to focus more on, how much effort, how hard was it for you? What did you learn from the experience? And I've tried to encourage them to always choose the hardest thing and not just settle for something that's easy just because you might get a good grade. And so big on the effort over results, trying new things, being willing to try and fail. I would encourage my kids to try stuff and fall down, within like safe confines. And I notice a lot of parents at the playground with little kids were like, be careful, and like holding them. And I understand you want to keep your kids safe, but we also have a job. And by the way, I'm not saying I'm a perfect parent or father by any means. I'd like many.
None of us are.
Right. We never are. But like, I try to do as good a job as possible with this. Our job as parents is to raise them to be great adults, right? And so they're going to face challenging situations when we're not around. And we want to give them an opportunity to do hard things, to fail, and learn that they can overcome that. My kids just started very difficult situations today. Actually, it's kind of apropos. As you know, we moved from the U.S. to Barcelona a year ago, and we just started them at some local schools that are in languages that they don't understand. It's going to be a very challenging experience for them. But I know that if they get through this year, it's going to be highly rewarding. They'll be able to prove to themselves that they can overcome tough situations. And so I want that for kids. And then, like, as you think about that for leaders, as leaders, ideally, I believe leadership is all about empowering and enabling people to succeed, whether in their job today or their career long term. And ideally, as a leader, you want your people to be kind of self-sufficient, to like come up with new ideas, to try stuff, to make your job easier so you can focus on the high-level strategy and leading and not like micromanaging and getting into the weeds. So first of all, you got to get away from micromanaging because everybody hates having a micromanager. But B, if you encourage them to try stuff, to say like, hey, I'm not going to come down on you if you try something new and it doesn't quite work out. This is how we come up with great ideas. That's how we have more innovation, more creativity. But we have to also encourage that and say like, hey, I really appreciate that you put effort into this. I know it didn't quite work out. Let's see what we can learn from this experience and really believe that we're always about learning and we're always about growing. And that's kind of the ultimate goal. I think that you're ultimately rewarded with that and that people feel more empowered and they benefit more from it, whether they're your kids or your direct reports or just people around us. So I'm just big on encouraging that idea of growth mindset and like the idea of learning and growth all the time.
No, I'm in agreement 100%. And Dr. Carol Dweck's book was a game changer for me as well. I'm sure you probably read Angela Duckworth's Grit, which is fantastic. And one of the things she talks about in there, and this goes back to parenting, but also for your team, is a lot of parents, they don't want to have their kids try stuff unless they're going to be perfect at it, like if they're going to get a great grade. And you run into situations like that where I've had employees in the past or have helped coach people where their team members are afraid to make a mistake because of their boss coming down on them. And that's not the type of environment you want. You want to have an environment where people feel like they have the psychological safety, where they can go out and explore and be innovative and do your best, like you said, Andy, which I totally agree with, even kind of celebrate the failures, you know, and realize that unless you're, I don't know, a heart surgeon or something, you're not going to blow up everything, right?
Right. There are exceptions, of course. Yeah. For doctors, like you want them to be perfect. But most of our jobs, most things don't need to be perfect. Like you can ditch the perfectionism. 90% is usually good enough. And I also like to put things in perspective and remind people like this is not easy. It takes practice over time. One of the examples I like to give is, you know, your kid or maybe you, right, picks up a dish in the kitchen at home and drops it. It breaks or they spill a cup of lemonade or milk or water or something like that. And oftentimes our tendencies go like, oh, what are you doing, you klutz? You know, almost criticize them or get upset or mad, like what? You got to be more careful. And I've really had to stop myself from that and just say, you know what? It's okay. We make mistakes. Let's just clean it up. The important thing here is that you learn from it and you take responsibility for it. Like, okay, I spilled it. I'm going to clean it up. And how can I get so mad at them for spilling drinks when I'm 44 years old and I still spill stuff all the time. So how can I get mad at them, right? But we do that. So I think it's good to kind of zoom out and put things in perspective too. And then also like the perspective thing in the grand scheme, what is a broken dish? Like who cares? Unless, yeah, I mean, maybe it's your great, great grandmother's, you know, that survived World War I and II or something. I could see being upset about that. But otherwise, like chances are it's from IKEA, like who cares, right? You can get another one. The important thing is that, you know, we're healthy, we're together, we're learning, we're growing, we're getting better in life, and no one's going to care about that dish in a year or two. I could be wrong. Someone at home may be like, I love my dishes, which is fine. But insert your example here. The other example I go to a lot with regards to mindset, I think it's really interesting getting curious about emotions is when you're driving your car and someone pulls right in front of you. We call it cutting us off. Someone cuts you off in traffic. People get so mad. This happened to me last week. I pulled in front of somebody. I wasn't really paying that much attention on the highway. And I pulled back over and they came by and they were like flipping me the bird and like yelling at me. and like this still happens, right? And I'm like, why? Like, who cares? Like, it wasn't a personal attack, right? And so I bring this up because I think it's an interesting challenge for people that tend to get angry about that, to step back and go like, why am I angry about this? Does this really matter? I could actually just slow down, give them space. They're probably in a hurry or they're probably not paying attention. It's not a personal attack on me. And just go on my way. I don't have to get angry. I don't have to get upset about this. And so the other thing that like I try to work with my kids on as I work with myself as well is understanding our emotions and starting to own and control our emotions a little more. Can't always be completely controlled. I think emotions are justified. But some of us, sometimes they're ingrained from early on. They're like, oh, we have to get angry and take everything as a personal affront when like oftentimes people are not really paying attention to us. They make mistakes. Like it's really not that big a deal.
I'm with you on that as well. One thing I would add though is sometimes that the person who you cut off, I mean, you don't know what kind of day they're having anyways, right? I mean, it could be, so you can't take it necessarily as a personal offense because maybe they're just having a horrible day. So you don't really know what's going on in their life. Do you have an example of either a bad boss that would get frustrated with you or not give you an opportunity after like a small failure that our audience could learn from?
Oh yeah, I've had unfortunately some really bad bosses over the years. I've had a couple who were micromanagers who, you know, they ostensibly are giving you autonomy to do something, but then it turns out if you don't do it exactly the way they want it, then they're really frustrated and angry and they come in and like, you need to redo this or do things my way, or I'm going to have to come in and do it now. And it's really frustrating for you as the employee. And it's equally frustrating for the manager. Like they're creating so much frustration that's unnecessary because that's not their role anymore. The role of a manager is not to do the work generally. The role of the manager is to empower the people on the team that do the work. So, I mean, I've had bosses that were extremely controlling and micromanaging. And then there's the other side. Like if you've ever read the book Multipliers by Liz Weissman, she...
Love it. One of my favorite books.
Yeah, amazing book. Liz spoke at my first conference, has become a good friend.
Wow.
And I've facilitated workshops based on her book, you know, all over the world. And by the way, I used to start those workshops by asking people like, think about the worst boss that you ever had, the most diminishing boss, what are the things they did? And the most common number one thing that would come up again and again is micromanaging, right? People don't like to be micromanaged. But she talks in that book, Multipliers, about bosses being either diminishers or multipliers. Do they multiply your intelligence or diminish it? And one thing she talks about is that most leaders don't show up intent on ruining your day or being a diminishing boss, right? They're doing the best they can. And a lot of leaders are what she calls accidental diminishers. So they're doing things that like can seem like are well-intended, but actually can diminish in the end. So I had one boss who was what she would call a protector. So he would ask me to put together all this data for like the leadership team and then say, well, I'm going to take this into the meeting with the leadership team and I'm going to take this. I don't want you to come in because you don't want to be exposed to like the criticism and all the stuff or whatever that could happen in this meeting. And his intent is to protect me. But what I receive is I'm not good enough to go to this meeting, right? It's too important for me. And therefore, I never get the experience. You're going back to growth mindset to go in there and try this stuff. And he's not ever elevating me to let me build my brand within the company. So it's interesting to look at like, where are you potentially accidentally diminishing people as a leader? She said, basically everybody has one, right? Mine was the optimist, which is like, it's great to be optimistic, but it can go too far. If like you assign the team a really hard project, you'll be like, ah, it's easy. Like you'll get this figured out. And they're like, could you recognize the work that we're doing on this?
Totally.
Okay, this is a lot of work. This is really hard. Like, okay, fine. Let's stop and recognize that. So I've gotten that feedback and had to learn over the years. So it's interesting to dig in and find out like, where are you potentially diminishing your people? And are you maybe micromanaging, which people do with good intent, right? Because they're afraid that things are not going to be done the right way and that it's going to look bad for them and their team. But it's something that you got to get out of the habit of, because you got to get into the habit of trusting your team so that you can empower them to get the job done.
And what's really important about that, and I've had many conversations with leaders over the years, are why go out and hire great talent and then stick them in a box? You stick them in a box and you control them. One, like you just said, they might get frustrated and lose their confidence because like, oh, Andy doesn't think I'm good enough to even be here and do this. And two, especially the younger generations who are all about growth and opportunities are going to be like, I'm just going to leave and find a place because I want to get the opportunities that are going to get me further on in my career. And from that perspective, kind of going back to your book, you know, owning your own career, you need as an individual contributor or even a leader who's got a boss who's treating you that way to be able to be self-aware of what's going on and making sure you don't get trapped in that situation. So going back to your book, you know, we talked about step one was clarity. Step two is really setting goals, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I believe the foundation, first of all, like the whole idea of owning your career is about taking full responsibility for everything going on in your career and your life, no matter what's happening. We absolutely need help from other people. There are lots of things that are outside of our control, but it doesn't help to really sit around and wait. A lot of people are drifting along, waiting for other people to tell them what to do or where to go, whether it be their boss or their parents or somebody else. So the foundation is understanding about the importance of ownership and responsibility, and then doing that self-reflection piece to build more of your self-awareness, understanding who you are and where you want to go. Step one, then, is to set a clear vision for where you want to go in your career. Think about what you might want to be doing 3 to 5 years out. It doesn't have to be perfect. It can change over time, but it gives you something to work towards. And then step two is to now make a plan and set goals, more shorter-term goals, to help you achieve that bigger vision. I'm a big fan of using SMART goals. Not everybody likes this, but stands for specific, measurable, actionable, relative, and time-bound. And I think the big keys here are that you get really specific about the goals that you're setting, that you find a way to measure the progress so you know if you're making progress, and then have some kind of timeline or deadline. Otherwise, you kind of drag them out forever, right? Like when I decided to write my book, people spend 10 years writing a book, especially if they don't have a deadline for it. But I said, I'm going to finish my book by this date. I'm going to publish it this year. This is how I'm going to get it done. And I put a plan in place and set kind of milestones and goals to get that done. And I do that with a lot of things, not perfectly, but I do that with a lot of things to achieve all the big stuff that I've done. And I see other people being successful with that. And then once you have those things in place, you recognize that not everything's going to go as planned. Not everything's going to go perfectly, right? Things may change and will change over time. We know that the economy and the working world is always changing. And so I believe we need to do things that are going to set us up for future success. And I believe there are three things that we can always be doing to prepare for the future. Number one is investing in continuous learning. We already talked a lot about the importance of learning. You know, the days of getting that kind of college degree and working in one space for 30 years are kind of over, right? We need to be investing and learning all the time. Number two is building your network, right? Building relationships with lots of different people in different places. And then number three is building your personal brand, which is essentially your reputation, what people think and feel about you. And as you build that brand, it allows you to achieve more recognition and more success over time.
One of the key things you said is that a lot of people, and you talk about this a lot in your book, go through life just drifting. And there's several causes for that. One probably is that they have a victim mentality, right? They feel like that the world's just happening to them. How can you help people shift out of that mentality and, for lack of a better term, get off their ass and be accountable or take ownership?
Yeah. I mean, you can't change anybody, right? All you can do, you can lead a horse to water, I guess, as they say. You can't make them drink. But through awareness and through education, through inspiration, showing people that it feels a lot better to take ownership and responsibility for things than drifting along waiting for someone else. You're going to achieve a lot more when you take ownership. Having that victim mindset is common, but it doesn't get you anywhere. People have a victim mindset tend to be a lot more like unhappy, to be angry, to be upset. I know people with this who are like good people, but they tend to be angry all the time at other people. And that victim mindset is like, oh, the world is out to get me, or you know, they pass me over this promotion because they don't care about me, or I never get a chance, or you know, I'm never going to get that thing that I want. And the ownership mindset, or like you said, everything in life happens to me. So we're always saying like, oh, this thing happened to me. This person cut me off in traffic, right? This person bumped into me and then made me, you know, drop my glass and break my dish, my glass, drop my drink. And so the ownership mindset is more like taking ownership and responsibility as much as possible, saying like, okay, these things didn't work out that well. What can I learn from this experience? How can I get better? What can I do what's in my power to try to achieve my goals? Again, like in your career, you're going to need help from your manager and other people, but there are a lot of things that you can do now that are in your control. And one shift you can make that is a small shift that can make a huge difference is in the language you use. As you mentioned, everything, you know, believe people with a victim mindset believe everything happens to them. I made a shift really several years ago when I learned about this concept to saying that everything in life happens for me. And when you start saying like, oh, this new project that was assigned, that was for me, right? When I got booted off the project, that happened for me. Why? I'm not sure yet, but it's going to create new opportunities for me. You know, everything in life is happening for me, even the hard stuff, even the challenges, right? And I've been through plenty of challenges, as you know, we all have. And I do believe it all happens for us. And it's not always easy to see in the moment. But when we truly believe that, then we can really start turning challenges into opportunities. And I believe that we can be a lot happier and more fulfilled in life.
That's so true. I mean, I'm sure you've read the book, A Man's Search for Meaning.
Yeah, Viktor Frankl, classic. Viktor
Frankl, I mean, you know, he's in the Holocaust and he's choosing to live his life. I mean, that's, you know, one thing that can't be taken away from him. And it's so important. And yes, we all have challenges. You've been very you've been very open about your when you went through cancer treatment and how, can you share a little bit about how you chose to look at that and how that's, you turned out into a, I don't want to call it a gift, but a positive for yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2020, as I was working on my book, I found out towards the end of that year that I had testicular cancer. And 2 days after I published my book in November of 2020, I had surgery to remove my left testicle and was then found out through subsequent scans that the cancer had spread to my stomach and my neck. And so it had spread across my body and it wasn't something that I could just do surgery and be done with. And doctors recommended chemotherapy and all this kind of stuff. And I was very frustrated. You know, I found it inconvenient. I'm like, hey, I just published a book. I got all this marketing to do. I don't have time for this. But obviously sometimes we get signals that we need to stop and take care of our bodies and really focus on, hey, what's the most important thing for me right now? And at that time, it was my health. And I just published this book about owning your career and owning your life. So I committed to taking full responsibility of the situation. And there's some important questions. So I do presentations on this, the 5 questions to ask anytime you face a big challenge or you're facing uncertainty. And we can link to a bonus resource that has these. But the first one is, what's great about this? So looking for the silver linings. The second one is, what can I learn from this? Which is really great when you make mistakes. The third one is, what does this make possible? So turning challenges into opportunities. I've got examples for all these things. But the fourth one is, recognize what's in my control and what's not in my control. And then number 5 is, how can I make the most of this or the best of this? So if I look at that situation, I say, hey, I didn't choose to have cancer. It's a frustrating situation. It's not what I wanted, but I also can't change it. I can't change the past and I can't change the fact that I have this. So what's in my control? What's in my control is how I respond to it, right? You can't control a lot of things. There are a lot of things in the world that are outside of our control, like politics, the weather, the world economy, even a cancer diagnosis, but what's in our control is how we respond to these things. So I'm going to respond in the best way possible and commit to learning as much as I can about cancer, health, nutrition, and doing everything I can to get healthy and beat this thing, because not only do I want to live a lot longer, but I have a wife and 2 kids and I'm going to be around for them. And so I started reading a lot of books. I learned everything I could, like I said, about health, cancer, nutrition. I invested in a lot of alternative and like natural solutions, as well as ultimately deciding to do chemotherapy as well with the doctors. And I went through this saying, I'm going to do everything I can to take ownership of this. I didn't choose it, but I'm going to make the best of it. And I'm going to do all the things that I know will help me get through it quickly, listening to the doctors, as well as switching to a plant-based diet, taking supplements, meditating every day, writing in a journal, focusing on things like gratitude, which we can always come back to no matter what's going on in our life, no matter what challenging things we're dealing with. There are always things we can be grateful for. So writing that down every day. And I got through this, right? And as many people do, I'm completely healthy today. And a friend asked me several months after, like, hey, I read your book. You said you believe everything in life happens for you. Now you've been through cancer. Do you still believe that? And my answer, I hesitated for a moment. And then I said, yeah, I absolutely do believe this happened for me. Maybe I didn't see it in the moment, but I see how it gives me opportunity to gain empathy for others who are going through challenging situations. It gives me something that I can share now to help others who are going through similar situations. And I want to be helpful in life. So with that in mind, for any listeners that may be going through cancer, have a loved one going through, I hope that's not the case. But if it is, I've also created a resource that lays out my experience, my research, my recommendations. It's all at andystorch.com/cancer. So you can link to that. It's right on my website. It's free. You just put in your email and download it. I'm not doing anything with it. I just want to help people, right? I want to do what I can to help people who are going through similar situations. And the thing I would say coming back to that is that it all comes back to taking ownership of your situation and saying, like, maybe I didn't choose this. It's frustrating. It sucks, but I'm going to do what I can to make the best of it, right? And then as you do that with small things, as you go along, like dropping the glass, that trains you to handle the more challenging situations when they come along. And they're still going to be hard, but you'll get through it easier, faster. I shared a lot of that, you know, on social media with other people to try to help and inspire people. And I just hope that I can continue to do that as I go along.
Well, Andy, I think you're an incredibly courageous person. And when I was listening to you speak in the past, I heard you say, well, I am going to get through this because I have a wife and two kids. And there's just no other way to do it. There's no other outcome. There's no other option. And I'm not a doctor and I'm not one of these foo-foo people, but I really do believe, and I learned this from my grandfather, who is the toughest, Frank Lemby was had the toughest mind I've ever seen, that having that positive mindset, it really helps. It does make a difference. You know, sitting here listening to you, I don't talk about it too much, but a lot of people who know me know that I have a progressive eye condition that, you know, I didn't ask for it. And it's, but it's a situation that I'm going to make the best out of, you know? And also I just like, your kids, I want my kids to grow up seeing that, hey, I'm making the best out of it, you know? So and I want to give back and help people. And just like you are doing too, other people who maybe are recently diagnosed with situations like that. And I just wanted to say, I think you're really inspiring, you know, because, not everybody, I would say probably, Andy, most people don't handle it the way you do, right? They might just sit there, wake up in the morning and say, why did this happen to me? Where I bet you wake up and say, why not have this happen to me? Right? Right?
I mean, I certainly like, I had that moment, right? There was a moment where I was sitting around and I was like, why did this happen? Why me? Like, why not all these other people?
Yeah.
And to be quite honest with you, like, I've been a big on health and fitness my whole life. Like, I thought I was eating pretty healthy. I was working out all the time, and I'm looking around at a lot of people who are not very healthy in the US. And I'm like, why me? Why not these other people? And, truth is, I don't know the answer, but it was a gift that was given to me. And so what am I going to do with it, right? I can sit here and be angry and be a victim, but it's not going to change anything. And what I have, like you said, you mentioned, you know, Viktor Frankl went through the Holocaust, one of the most awful things we could ever imagine in human history. And, you know, he lost his whole family. And as he was going through, you know, he determined that, other people can take everything away from you. Life can take everything away from you, but it can't take away your ability to make meaning out of life. It can't take away your mindset. And, you know, he got to the point where he said, well, I'm grateful that my family, the rest of my family is dead, so they don't have to go through this, right? They're lucky, and I'll go through it for them. And he's inspired millions of people
millions.
With his work, right? Long since his passing, with his work and his mindset through that. And that just, it doesn't mean that things aren't hard, or that you can't be angry or sad or frustrated.
They're hard.
These are real emotions, right? You can't, but it can be helpful to think about how he handled that, how other people handle things, and think, okay, this is a situation I can't change. So let me just see how I can make the most of it. And every situation is different. But the other thing I will just say is we all do face challenges. They're all different. And I'm a strong believer that after you get through a certain challenge, whether it's health, relationship, financial, et cetera, you are now qualified to help other people who are going to go through similar challenges in the future. You don't have to write a whole book about it. You don't have to post on social media. But the more you talk about it and let other people know, hey, I've been through a divorce, or I've lost my parents, or I've gone through a bad breakup, or I have this eye condition, or I've gone through testicular cancer, People in my network, when they find out or they're worried they might have testicular cancer or any kind of cancer, especially related, they reach out to me and they ask my advice. And I love it. I can't solve their problems, but you know, it makes me feel helpful. And it's only because I put it out there that people know. And so if you've been through these other challenging situations, like I said, I don't have the same eye issue. I haven't been through a divorce. I'm very lucky. I haven't lost my parents yet, but other people have. And if you're willing to reach out to other people when you're dealing with these challenges, the people who have been through it before can help you. And if you are going through those challenges, you now have the ability to help other people, at least with empathy, but possibly with some expertise on how you got through it as well.
Yeah, I would almost even piggyback on that, saying that you're almost responsible after you get through those challenges for, I don't want to go that far, but you know, giving back and helping others.
You have a great opportunity for sure.
You have a great opportunity. And I've found, similar to what you said, it makes you actually feel better to want to be able to help people go through it, even if it's just the empathy. But people always need or want somebody to turn to. And if you take that from the business side, you know, let's pivot back over to that, where there's people out there who are maybe looking for work or, you know, struggling in their career. Being a mentor and helping individuals can go a long way as well.
Well, 100%, right? And I think finding mentors, lots of people are looking for mentors, and it's not always easy. There's no formula for that. A lot of companies are starting mentorship programs, which I love. If you're not in that situation, just reaching out to some people on LinkedIn who are maybe doing the jobs that you want to be doing in the future and just saying, hey, I see you're doing this job. I'd like to do that one day. Can we just have a chat so I can ask you questions about it? Most people are pretty amenable to that. You're not asking them for anything other than advice and like a little bit of their time. And we have the opportunity to help people, again, going back with the things we've been through. So I run a community for talent development professionals called the Talent Development Think Tank. There's a woman in that community named Jess Siegel who got laid off last year. And as she was going through her job search, which ended up being a lot longer than she thought it would be, she started a subgroup in our community for other people who are looking for jobs. And it became this kind of great resource. They met on a weekly basis to just support each other, talk about the job search, the challenge that they're dealing with. What kind of job are you looking out for? What companies are you reaching out to? How can we help each other? And she ended up helping a lot of people along the way. And then she finally landed a job, a great job. And she already referred another member of our community into that company, got her a job, and has been a resource, a great resource for other people who are going through you know, that layoff, unemployment, that sort of stuff. So using that experience to then help other people, because there are going to be other people going through it, and we're in tough times. And, you know, if you're out there and you're trying to figure out, what am I doing with my career? I'm in this tough period. I would, again, go back to those steps, like start with the self-awareness, build that, you know, what is it that you truly like doing? What do you not like doing? What do you want to do more of in the future? Strengths, weaknesses, values. Start to think about what's that ideal situation, the job or career you'd like to have down the line. Can you put a plan in place? What are some things that would help you get there? And probably one of those things is networking, right? Is going out and talking to people who are doing that, building relationships, and then seeing what opportunities come from that. But I usually think that's the best way to go when you're trying to make that next move to get a different job or grow in your career.
Yeah. And I want to add to that, that you don't need to be out of a job to start reaching out to other people and in the community. I was talking to a friend of mine who's in sales, and it's really tough for him right now. So one of the things that he's done is he's just kind of gone on LinkedIn and he's pinged other salespeople, and they've started their own subgroup and their own community, and they're getting creative and they're sharing ideas, you know, because it's easier to do things as a group and stay positive than try to go as a lone shark on everything all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and in doing and building a network, which is super important, and you do talk about this a lot, it's a long game, right? It doesn't happen. You know, you have to deal a lot with delayed gratification. But can you share a little bit about some recommendations? And then I want to kind of get into your next book, which is kind of the same thing around the importance of personal brand. But let's talk a little bit about how you can go about building your network. And it's never too late to start building your network, by the way, listeners.
Yeah. Oh, it's absolutely never too late, right? They say, there's an old adage about networking I always love called, you know, it says, dig your well before you're thirsty, right? So start now before you need it. But even if you needed it, you know, there's that also the Chinese proverb, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is today. So you might as well start today. I usually recommend starting with the people that you've already met and know, right? Can you reach back out to people you've worked with 10, 20 years ago, get to know the people you work in your job with today better, get to know some other colleagues, reach back out to classmates from school and just find out what they're working on, what they're doing. LinkedIn is the best resource always to do this, right? To go look people up and see what they're doing, reach out, connect with them, send a message. And then you can start reaching out to new people as well and say, well, you know, I work in product management. I'd like to know more people in that space, or I work in, data analysis. I like to know more people in that space. You can start looking people up in similar industries, or maybe who are alumni from your school, which is always nice. It's always nice to start with some type of connection, some type of commonality. I think people respond favorably to that. So if you went to the same school, live in the same geographic area.
That's a big one, school.
Right? Yeah, school is huge, right? If you went to a big university, absolutely take advantage of that and look up alumni. Not everybody necessarily has that that opportunity, but you know, there's geography, there's common interests. Maybe you're alumni of the same company, you both worked at Disney in the past or whatever it is. You know, look for those opportunities and you can reach out and send connection requests. And I always like customizing those to say, you know, hey, Damon, I saw that you run a successful podcast at a company in the L&D space. I'd like to get something like that going. Can I just reach out and pick your brain or ask you some questions? And he may say yes, he may say no, but it doesn't hurt to ask. And I find most people, especially in the corporate space, are pretty amenable to sharing their kind of thoughts on these things. And if you find a way to offer any kind of value to them, even just asking questions and listening to them, but maybe you can make some type of recommendation, then you become more valuable to them. And you never know, that might lead to an opportunity. You may get on a call and someone might say, hey, actually, we're looking to hire somebody in this role right now. I'm so glad you reached out. Or maybe nothing will come from it. I like to go into these things with low or no expectations, but I do know there's a lot of opportunities that come from intentionally reaching out or proactively reaching out and having conversations, talking with people. As my friend Ben Killoy likes to say, I think I quoted him in my book on this. He said, you're always just one conversation away from changing the rest of your life, but you just don't know what that conversation is until you have it, right? So you got to go talk to people.
Absolutely. But do you have any good examples or funny stories about what not to do when it comes to trying to build a network?
Well, I think people react. What I think people don't like is when they feel like you're asking them for something that they either can't provide, or it's putting them in a tough situation, or they've worked hard for something and they don't know you that well. So you right away are asking someone to refer you for a job and they're not really a close friend. They're not someone that knows you that well. You're kind of putting them in an awkward position, right? Asking them to introduce you to somebody if they may not know that person that well, or they don't know you that well. So you got to kind of weigh that. There's always an opportunity maybe to get to know them a little better. People don't like if you feel like you're kind of bypassing them, right? I had someone, this is kind of weird. I don't know how this example lands, but someone, an author friend asked me for an introduction to someone a little bit more prominent than me to write an endorsement for their book. And I was like, I'm happy to help you out. But in my
hold on a second. They wanted you to ask somebody else to write an endorsement for their book?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And I like this person. I was happy to help them out. But in my mind, I had the thought of like, well, why didn't you ask me to endorse your book, right? And I'm an author as well. And I'd be happy to do that for you. And I think it'd be great for me. And they didn't. And so find ways to provide value to the people. If you're asking someone for help, make sure you have a good, credible relationship with them or find a way to try to add value to them. I'm not big on like, you have to do equal trades and I'm a big, big fan of giving without any expectation. So like, I'm happy to do you a
100%.
Favor, right? And I don't expect anything from you. I just know from a, call it karma or anything else, it's going to come back to me in the end. So the other thing I would say is if you want other people to help you, make sure you're always doing things to help others, right? So I'm always looking out for opportunities to be generous and kind and helpful to people in my network. I don't expect anything back from them. But what I've found is over time, it comes back to me in spades, right? Maybe from different people in different ways. I can tell that you take that tact as well, Damon, and I'm sure it's worked out quite well for you. So I would say those are like the big things. I had a weird one the other day, but I hesitate to even say it. But basically, someone kind of wrote me a really nice note about a guest I had on my show and thanking me, and it was very heartfelt, and it seemed to be about one thing. and then ended it with an ask to come on my show. And I was like, yeah. It just felt kind of weird.
It's manipulative.
Yeah, like maybe just stick with the initial message and get a conversation going and then see if you can make that ask. But when you make the ask right away, that kind of puts me in an awkward position. I don't know. It just felt awkward. I think I never responded to that one.
Yeah. And for our listeners out there who are saying, well, I don't know what value I could do for in return for somebody like Andy. One thing that I know I appreciate, and I'm sure you appreciate as well, is if you're connected with us on LinkedIn, just comment on some of the posts. That's an easy something that will help out with your algorithm and that other people appreciate. So get creative, because there are ways to give back in relationships like that. So,
oh yeah, 100%. Like, as you know, I'm hosting a conference coming up soon. Mm-hmm. You're going to be involved in that. We've talked about partnering and you sponsoring. And I kind of handpick speakers for that conference. And people always reach out and be like, how can I apply to speak at your conference? And the answer is kind of like, if I don't know you, then you're not going to speak at my conference. It's about people I've built relationships with. And a lot of people I ask are people that have, you know, actively been members of my community or have supported me on LinkedIn, have like just been really kind and helpful to me. And I want to reward them by inviting them to come speak at my conference. It's like, it's pretty simple. And I don't see it as like a transactional thing. It's just that these are the people that I know, like, and trust. And these are the people that I want to work with. And if you're just coming out cold, then it's probably not going to work out. So find ways to like build relationships and do nice things for people. And that's going to build your credibility, not only with them, but they're going to tell other people as well, right? And you're going to build that reputation, which feeds into that personal brand.
Absolutely. And I think the key thing you said right there is because it builds trust, because your conference, you know, the attendees and people like me, learn it, who are sponsoring, we want to make sure that, you know, we have tried and true great speakers. Talk a little bit more about your conference. What are some of the big takeaways that you've had over the years that you're excited about for the upcoming one?
Yeah, well, the reason I started this conference, I started with my friend Bennett Phillips 4 years ago, was because we had been going to a lot of different conferences to network and meet potential clients and learn about what's going on in the industry. I know you do this as well. And we just found most of them to be pretty boring. Like, it was just a lot of death by PowerPoint, you know, the expert on stage teaching, but they're not even very good presenters, quite frankly. They know a lot, but they're not great speakers. And at the time, we had a business where we were like doing a lot of facilitation and running experiential learning programs. And we just thought there's got to be a better way to do this. And so we decided to host our own. And we brought a lot of great facilitators together from our network, partner companies we worked with, sponsors who were in kind of more of an experiential learning space. And we brought them together and just committed to, we're going to run a conference. Other than a couple of keynote speakers like Liz Weissman and Josh Burson, who spoke at our first conference. But we're going to commit to being really experiential, engaging, interactive. And my mission with it, whereas we have our third one coming up on November 6th to 7th, 2024 in Orlando, is that I want people to learn as much from each other as they do from the experts on stage. Because I look around at these conferences and I just think there's so much experience and wisdom in the audience, right? It's great to learn from speakers, but everyone else in the room has been doing this job. We can learn from each other. So I want to create situations where people can do that. So we do have some really great speakers, really great, you know, facilitators, really great sponsors who are going to be at the conference. But I also want to create situations where people learn just as much from each other as they do from people on stage. And then the last thing I'll say about it is that if you can't tell already from our conversation, I'm very big on networking and relationships. So we create an environment that's very friendly, where people feel comfortable talking to each other at breaks, staying late, having conversations. We have dinner, we have receptions. And what we found in the past is people leave with friends, not just information, not just colleagues, but real friends that they can call and check in with and take trips with and that sort of thing. And that just really lights me up and makes me feel really happy when I find out that, you know, we've connected people that have gotten jobs, that have become friends, that have, you know, done all of those things. And that's always my goal.
And for our listeners out there who haven't been going to conferences, let me tell you, people are pumped up about going to in-person conferences. You know, there is a big, you know, shortage of them, obviously, or none during COVID. And so people are getting out there. All the conferences I've been to recently, people are excited. They're willing to talk and share and learn. So take advantage of it. I just think there's so much opportunity, and I agree with you 100%. I think it's great. You get to listen to the speakers, but the side conversations and the network you build. I think it 10x's the investment in whether it's ATD or conference.
In addition to hosting this, you know, I pay to attend a lot of other conferences, and I would say like it's great to hear certain speakers, and maybe you'll learn something from them. But long term, I think the value is in the relationships you build. So the people that you meet at these conferences. So I'm always like thinking when I'm thinking about attending a conference, I want to look at who's speaking. But really, I ask myself, like, who are the types of people that are going to be here that I could potentially meet? And could they be potential, you know, clients or partners or just friends? I've made so many great friends at conferences over the years, and I want to continue to do that.
And for those of you who do go, you got to get out of your comfort zone and introduce yourself and talk to people, because, you know, guys like Andy and myself or others, we want to meet people, you know? I mean, so that's why we're there too. So it's there to meet people, network, and everybody, I believe, can learn from everybody else. So there's always something you can learn from people. So take advantage of it. I know we're almost coming up on time, but I'm going to put you to your SMART goals. When's your new book on personal branding coming out?
That's a good question. So the new book is going to be about building your personal brand in corporate. The working title is Own Your Brand, Own Your Career. And we're recording this in September 2024. The tricky part is I'm working with a partner, with a collaborator on this. And so there's a little bit more moving parts. I can't say definitively, like, this is where we're doing it. But our plan right now is to publish the book in January of 2025, or we'll say Q1 2025. So we'd keep an eye out on that. Own Your Brand, Own Your Career. We've already hosted one webinar on it, and I'll get you the link that you can put in your show notes, because you can go back and watch the recording. It was a great webinar we did where we kind of broke down some of the main concepts and some exercises you can do to help you think through your personal brand, which again is essentially your reputation. It's what people think about you. It's going to exist whether you do something about it or not. So I'm a big advocate of being intentional about building your brand authentically as well. Like I'm a big advocate of authenticity. So it's not about being fake, but it's really about considering what do you want to be known for and then following through to build that brand. And we have some great exercises in the book. And then also in this webinar, we walk you through exercises you can do right now to help you really think through it and start to build that brand today.
I will put the link in the show notes, but can you share with us one of those concepts?
Yeah. So one of them I like to do is a simple one is what I call the I am exercise. And it's really to sit down and write down all the things that you associate yourself with. And so you can say, for instance, for me, I am a husband, a father, a brother, a son, a grandson. I'm also an author, a speaker, a trainer, a facilitator. I am a cyclist. I'm a health and fitness enthusiast. I'm a vegetarian. All these things, right? And look for patterns and think about the ways you identify. Another one that's sort of related to that is to write down all of the things you have done in the past in your work, and especially the ones where you felt the strongest at, that you enjoyed doing, that you were good at, and start to look for patterns there and the way you can pull those things out. Maybe you eliminate some words in the sentence to think about how you can use those in a future career, if you're thinking about shifting careers or doing something differently, so that you can start to use those and say, okay, what are my strengths? What are the things I care about? How can I leverage those more in building a career? And then one more I would say is the simple one that I do in workshops a lot, which is just to ask yourself, what are like three or four things that I want to be known for, right? Is it hard work, integrity, inspiration, kindness, energy, et cetera? Write those down and commit to being known for those things, and then start to ask yourself on a regular basis, am I acting in alignment with the brand that I said I want to portray, right? So one of mine is like kindness and generosity. I can ask myself at the end of the day, have I been kind and helpful and generous to people, or have I, quite frankly, been acting selfish? Well, actually, I've been acting pretty selfish lately. Like maybe it's a good time to go out and do something nice for somebody. Otherwise, I either need to change my brand or I need to take some action to act more in alignment with that. It's a good kind of reality check to see if you are acting in alignment with the brand that you want to portray.
It's kind of like organizations with their core values, making sure that you're living towards those values. I think that's great. And it goes back to what you talked about in your first book, which is about self-reflection. And really, I guess, being honest with yourself as well is, you know, are you actually being authentic and are you doing what you say you're going to do and aligning it with it? I got one more question before I let you go. Your book came out when? 2020?
November 2020. Yeah, we're coming up on 4 years.
So what has changed for you about, is anything changed for you since you wrote that book about the content in it? Like, have you had a different perspective on anything?
So, I mean, my life has certainly changed because I had kind of a vision that I want to go build a career as a speaker, build a business as a speaker and trainer, and I wasn't quite there yet. And there were some hiccups and challenges along the way because, you know, while I was writing the book, COVID, the pandemic started, and like speaking kind of went away for a while. As you know, both of our businesses were struggling during that time, but things have come back and I've been able to build a business around it and really kind of achieve that vision that I set out. I think most of the book is pretty, you know, evergreen, as they say. It has been interesting to see the life cycle of events, like you said, because I started writing the book and I was writing about networking and I'm like, you need to get out there and go to events. And then the pandemic hit and I'm like, okay, right, you need to get on LinkedIn and yeah, talk to people virtually, right? And now events have certainly come back, like you said.
Big time.
But it's sort of a hybrid of both because now people are traveling less for like work obligations. Like we've found that we can get a lot of work done virtually. And so we're not going to get on a plane unless we feel like we have to. But at the same time, a lot of people still want to get together in person. So they're still looking for those opportunities. And so I think when you think about things like networking and building your career, you got to be more proactive than ever because it's not as easy to just like walk around the office and see people if you're not in an office all the time. And then there are those times when you're able to get together with people. Maybe you work in a remote team, but you get together once or twice a year, like a lot of companies are doing. So do you take full advantage of that time to really build relationships with people, have that conversation with your manager, that sort of stuff? You just have to be more proactive and more intentional about the things that you want to achieve and the relationships you want to build and that sort of stuff. And it can absolutely still happen. We're just kind of in a hybrid and you got to look at your situation for what it is and kind of evaluate that and then make the best of it.
Yeah. And I'm with you on that. And I really see that if you're a business professional and you're not building your brand on LinkedIn, you're missing a major opportunity because I believe that you have the opportunity to put a lot of good content out there in your own beliefs and that people want to connect and learn from each other and you got to go for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Andy, what's one more thing you'd like to leave our audience with before we close out?
Well, we've talked about this idea of ownership mindset and taking ownership of your career. And the truth is, like, no matter what you're doing, nobody cares more about your career than you do. You know, if you're lucky, you have parents who are still around who love you and care about you. If you're really lucky, you have a manager who cares about you and wants you to do well in your career. But really, at the end of the day, nobody cares more about your career than you do. So you've got to be the one to own it. You've got to be the one to figure out, you know, what you truly want to do, to understand who you are, your strengths, your weaknesses, your values. You got to be the one to set your vision, to make a plan, to set those goals, to be willing to ask for help from others, to do the things that'll set you up for future success, like investing in learning, building your network, building your brand. You got to be the one to develop your mindset, right? That growth mindset. And you got to be the one to design and live the life that you want. So no one else is going to do it for you. You got to be the one to sit down. And remember, you can't do it alone. Make sure you're asking for help. You're leveraging other resources, but make sure you're taking ownership as well.
That's great. So, I mean, we could go on for hours, but this has been great. We've covered everything from the importance of having an ownership mindset, you know, staying away from the victim mindset. Don't drift through your career. And I like what you say that a goal without a plan is really just a wish. And so much more, the importance of lifelong learning, getting out there and networking. So this is all great stuff. You have a ton of great resources out there, both free and paid. Can you share with our audience where they can connect with you at?
Yeah, absolutely. So the book is Own Your Career, Own Your Life. It's available on Amazon. If you want just a free summary, you can go to andystorch.com/bonus and you can download the 5 steps to owning your career. I think I have in there also the 5 questions to ask anytime you're facing a challenge, as I mentioned earlier. If that's not there, you can go to andystorch.com/5questions with the number 5. You got the cancer guide on there, I mentioned, but everything is on my website, andystorch.com. Very active on LinkedIn. I've got 2 podcasts as well, including the Talent Development Hot Seat. So feel free to follow along and reach out and let me know you heard me on Damon's show.
Yeah, and you should check out Andy's podcast, Own Your Career. He's got a lot of great solo episodes out there that I think are great learning opportunities. And so for our audience, if you enjoyed our conversation today, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to go to your platform and I'd like you to text it to somebody who can get value out of this. Maybe somebody you know who's got a fixed mindset or going through a tough time, and share this with them because I'm sure that they'll get value out of it. So until next time, I'd like everybody to remember to, who do we have there? Hi.
This is Lucy, just coming in at the end.
Wait a second. Hi. Lucy, how old? I know we're still on air, but how old are you, Lucy?
10.
Because I have a 7-year-old named Lucy as well. So
no
the
way.
2 of you need to talk sometime. All right, everybody. Until next time, stay curious and keep learning. Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.